1 Corinthians 10, let's go there first. And these are lessons that we need to have in our mind always, because we're always fighting against. Remember in Ephesians, it talks about putting on the armor of salvation, the helmet, and so on. We always have to be alert for Satan's things. Peter said, Satan is going around as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now, I want to correct one, well, I shouldn't say correct, but I want to make clear one thing here that Mr. Black was talking about, and I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression, and I know he didn't mean this, but I'm thinking, well, someone could interpret it this way, and that is that the church, you know, he said, well, where is the true church? The true church is a spiritual body. Understand that. It is not a corporate organization. But the church people, the people who God has put into the spiritual body, it's obvious in the Bible here that they come together as a organization or a group, and God lays out certain organizational things that should be in that group. But the church is comprised of people who are converted and who believe what God says and do it. That's what the church is. And Mr. Armstrong pounded away at that, and I'm sorry to say that it was misemphasized many times in the, during those years that the, you know, when Mr. Armstrong said, you can't leave the church. Well, that's true. But a lot of people thought that meant you can't leave this corporate organization, and that, and he said, it isn't a corporate organization. It is a spiritual body. And he said it over and over and over, and he would correct the men at meetings and so on when they'd begin to refer to it that way. So we have an organization, okay? And we believe what the Bible says, and we try to obey it. Now, for whatever reason, which is not, as I said, super clear to me even at this point, there were people felt like they needed to leave that group and do what they wanted to do. Now, I didn't finish what I was saying before. The good thing about the fact that I'm not in charge and having fired these people, the good thing is they made their own decision. Nobody, and this was emphasized by Darris McNeely, no one was forced to leave. Everybody decided, just like back in 95 when people tried to change what the Bible said and they tried to change what we believed and they tried to pervert and twist it and say, oh, the Bible doesn't say that, which we knew wasn't true. I mean, that was nothing new. That's what we came out of. That's what we gave up, was the false teaching. And so back then, everybody got to do what they wanted. If they didn't want to keep the Sabbath anymore, if they didn't like it, if it wasn't something that they enjoyed doing or could see a benefit in, which many people told me about later, which shocked me, that they'd been doing it for years and years and years. Well, I never did like that. Well, that's because you didn't understand. Because if you understood, you would have loved it. But that was their choice, okay? They decided. Nobody kicked them out. They did what they wanted. And God lets you do what you want. Now, these folks resigned. That was the better way to do it. That was their choice. They left. Fine. If you're not happy here, go someplace else where you are happy, because if you're here and you're unhappy, that makes everybody unhappy. So go where you're happy. Then we're happy, you're happy, everybody's happy. Isn't it wonderful? It's the way it is. And God says, do what you want. You do what you want. And if that's the way you want to go, fine. Now, you know, there are consequences of our decision. But that was good because everybody made their own choice. But just so you understand this relationship between the church organization and the body of Christ. They're the same, but they're not. It's a spiritual body, and only God can put us in that, and we only can be put in it if we repent and if we're baptized and so on. And we give ourselves to do what God says totally and not try to, oh, I think I want to do this over here. Well, God's not happy with that. All right, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 6, he says, now these things, this is talking about the children of Israel in the wilderness, and he said in verse 6 that these things were done for our example, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and that we don't become idolaters, and then we don't we don't tempt God by murmuring against God and doing all the things. And like in verse 10, neither murmur you as some of them also murmur and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. So then whoever thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. All right, so then it would be a wise idea, if this is the case, as Paul wrote here, that we go back and we look at those examples. Maybe we can learn something in our spiritual lives and help us avoid mistakes currently, which is what he said was the purpose for recording all of that. So let's go back to Numbers 13 as one example. And this is pretty interesting. By the way, my wife is I don't know if she's has a touch of the flu or what, but she made it through the week, and then this morning she woke up and it was really feeling lousy, all stuffed up, and so I just told her that she wanted to come, but I said, I don't think that's a very wise idea. And then my mom, since my wife was staying home, she thought she would stay home with her. So they're at home. All right, Numbers 13 is a very interesting preamble to what I want to, and this is only one, oh, this is time number 10, by the way, that God brought out of Egypt murmured against and complained against God, the Creator, the one who performed all these miracles to bring them out of Egypt. And it's just amazing. And yet 10 times they griped and complained, and this was the 10th time. But it wasn't to be the last, unfortunately for them. Okay, so Numbers 13, these people had now under Moses' direction and Aaron, by the way, Aaron already had disqualified himself from being able to go into the promised land because of the golden calf. You know, Moses is up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. He comes back. The people are partying and doing all this stuff, and they have this golden calf, and he's, what happened? And Aaron goes, well, I don't know. I threw this gold in the fire, and I'll pop this calf. I just don't know. It was the people. Well, God said you can't go into the promised land. Later on, Moses himself loses his temper, strikes the rock, which he wasn't supposed to do, and he also was not allowed to go into the promised land. There were only two people that ended up from that generation going into the promised land. Caleb and Joshua. It's important to do what God says. And it shows us how God looks at things. He's not, he's very merciful and he's willing to forgive if we repent. But he does not like evil. And he doesn't like criticism. And he doesn't like all these murmuring and complaining and lack of faith. It does not make the great God who created us and made us, and we're just little pipsqueaks, and we sit there, oh, we don't like this. That's not good. Okay, so what transpires here in Numbers 13, we won't read all of this through verse 17, because it just says there's going to be a representative from each one of the tribes, along with Caleb. And I'm not sure if Joshua went with him or not. I'd have to read this to see. But regardless, verse 17, and Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. Now, they'd been going through the wilderness for quite a while. They finally got to the promised land. They're about ready to go into the land of milk and honey. They're right there. It's like across the river kind of thing, or up over the mountain. And they're ready to go in. And, of course, living out in the desert wasn't the most pleasant thing. It was pretty good. God took good care of them, fed them, made sure they had water, had a nice camp environment, gave them light at night through the pillar and shade during the day, but not the best thing. And they didn't have their inheritance and so on. And so Moses sent them to spy out this land of Canaan. He said, get you up, and verse 17, this way, southward, and go into the mountain. And so they took off to check out, as he said, go see whether these people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. And they spent 40 days checking out the land. Now, they had to be careful because they could have been attacked by these people if they knew they were there. So they were probably very carefully moving, and there were 12 or, let's say, roughly 12 men. And it says, verse 20, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether it be there's woods there, wood there or not, and he says, be of good courage and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. And so they went out and they searched out the land. Of course, we know about these this big branch of grapes that they brought back that had to be carried between two men. In verse 23, he said they brought a branch with one cluster of grapes and they bare it between two upon a staff. And they brought the brought back pomegranates and figs. And the place was called the brook and so on and so forth. Big cluster of grapes. I don't want to get into all those details. And verse 26, and they went and they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation. Now here's where the trouble begins. And to all the congregation of the children of Israel to the wilderness of Paran, and brought back word to them and unto all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. So here they are out in the desert, and they've been eating manna all this time, and they bring grapes and figs and all these other things that were pretty attractive looking. And they told him and said, we came to the land where you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. And they had the proof. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Those are the big giants. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. Now he trusted what God said, and he knew God would be behind them. But the other fellas weren't of the same mind. Now, one man was supporting God, and the other people were not very happy. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched into. And the children of Israel saying, the land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the son of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were like in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. We're just little grasshoppers in comparison to them. Now, who did they listen to? And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. oh, no, this is going to be terrible. Oh, this is never going to work. Oh, we're all going to get killed. Of course, they'd, you know, been brought through the Red Sea, and they'd had water come, you know, provided for them in miraculous ways. Manna coming down every day to feed them, but they thought they were going to get taken over by these people. So they griped and they bellyached. In verse 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. Oh, what did you do to us? And the whole congregation said to them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness. And they're going to get their wish. And wherefore has the Lord brought us? Now, they blame Moses and Aaron, and then they blame God. Verse 3, and wherefore has the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return to Egypt? And they said to one another, well, let's make a cap. Let's get us a captain here, and let us return to Egypt. We'll get somebody to lead us, and we'll go back to Egypt. That's a good idea. Sounds familiar, back in 1995. Anyway, when Moses and Aaron fell on their face, or then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. Why did they do that? Because they knew what God's reaction was going to be to that. I mean, they are just boldly accusing God of bringing them out in the wilderness to kill them after he's been taking care of them for all this time. That's pretty presumptuous and pretty rebellious and pretty disgusting. And he's about ready to give them the land that flows with milk and honey, give them their inheritance, and here's a little sample of the things and the fruits and so on that that they brought back, and they could have that. And now they're saying, well, it would have been better for us to die in Egypt or in the wilderness or whatever they came up with. And here's verse 6, and Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of, I can't pronounce that name, which were of them that searched out the land, rent their clothes. Because, okay, so Joshua was with them. So they all just tore their clothes because they realized what they were saying, what these people were saying to God. And they spoke unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land in which we pass through to search it, it is exceeding good land. And if the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only don't rebel against the Lord, neither fear you, the people of this land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. In other words, trust God. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. All of a sudden, God came down. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long are they going to keep sticking me in the eye with a stick? And how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed them among them? In other words, how many signs am I going to have to do before they're finally going to trust me? He said, that's it. I'm going to smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a greater nation and a mightier than they. And then Moses began to reason with God in this thing, and I won't go through all of that, but God decided to pardon them once again. In verse 19, pardon, I beseech you, the iniquity of these people, Moses is saying, according to the greatness of your mercy, and as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Time after time, God forgave them. And the Lord said, I've pardoned according to your word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all those, now here comes God's viewpoint. This is how God looks at this kind of attitude. total faithlessness of all the griping and accusations. I mean, those are pretty strong accusations against Moses and Aaron, and then against God directly. That's pretty bad. Totally unfounded. They just made them. They just said, well, it was better for us to have died in Egypt, that God had allowed us to die in the wilderness. Why did God bring us out here to fall by the sword? This is just unbelievable. Did they have any reason or any support or any facts to support their accusations? No, everything was the opposite. They had all these proofs. 10 times God had shown them his power and his strength, plus bringing them through the Red Sea and all the miracles, the plagues that took place back in Egypt. Just anyway. So, anyway, he says, verse 22, because all these men which have seen my glory, there wasn't any question, there was total proof, but they still ignored it. And my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted or tested or criticized me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice. Surely they shall not see the land, which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, in other words, God's spirit, and has followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you, he's telling Moses and Aaron, turn around and get back into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Now it's important for you to know this, because we're going to read about Korah's rebellion, but this is the basis of why Korah and his friends were so ticked off. And they had pretty strong reason. They were not happy campers. Okay, so he said, you turn around and get back out in the wilderness. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel which they have murmured against me. God hears our, knows our thoughts, and he hears what we say. Say unto them, as truly as I live, says the Lord, as you have spoken in my ears, so I will do to you. In other words, I'm going to do exactly what you have accused me of doing. You're going to get what you wanted. And your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless you shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to you, which I swear to make you dwell therein, except for Caleb the son of, and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which you shall, which you said shall be a prey, remember, our women and our children will be prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in the wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. Now this is God talking. After the number of the days in which you search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year shall you bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and you shall know my breach of promise, or in other words, my change of mind. So they're going to have to be out there for 40 more years. Now, they were right up to the brink. They're looking over there, tasting some of this. Oh, man, look at those grapes, and look at these figs, and I love it. Oh, we can't go in there. God's not going to take care of us. We're all going to die. It's all dumb. Really dumb. You know? I mean, if anybody had the proof, these folks had the proof. And God knew it. 10 times they did it to him. He said, that's it. Okay? Get back out in the wilderness. You're going to be out there for 40 years, and you're going to die in the wilderness. You're so happy with it? Well, you're going to have it. I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all the evil this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. People think there's strength in numbers. Well, sometimes that's, God doesn't care about that. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men which Moses sent to search out the land who returned and made, now listen to this, in verse 36, and the men which Moses sent to search out the land who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him. These leaders made the congregation murmur against because they brought up the evil report. Are they responsible for their mouth flapping? Yes, they will pay the price. People who are the progenitors of criticism and all the things that have been going on are going to be responsible for those actions. And he said, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord. So they died right then. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, which were of the men that went in to search the land, still live. They were the only two that did. Okay. Now, this had to come as a real downer to these folks. And verse 39, Moses told these sayings to all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. They were ready to go into the land. And now they have to go back out into the wilderness, and they're going to die out there? They were not happy. And they rose up early in the morning, these people, and they went, oh, you mean we're not going to get to, something's going to change here. And they rose up early in the morning, and they got themselves up to the top of the mountain, saying, lo, we be here, okay, we're ready to go in, and we will go into the place which the Lord has promised, for we have sinned. And Moses said, wherefore now do you transgress the commandment of the Lord, but it shall not prosper? He said, now you're going against God again. They're going to go in anyway. Don't go up, for the Lord is not among you, that you be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites and so on are before you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed, they were presumptuous, you know what that means. You know, they don't have the authority, they don't have the right, but they jump in there anyway, and they presume to go. We're going anyway. We're not going to go back out in the desert. We're going into the place of land of milk and honey, and we're going to go up onto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. And, of course, you know what happened. Verse 45, the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt in the hill, and they kicked their butt. They smote them, and they discomforted them. They killed them. Not nice. All right. So as time goes by in the next chapter, I didn't do enough research to know specifically how much time goes by. And God gives them instruction about the Sabbath and keeping it and so on. While this is going on, these people are not happy. They have to go back out in the wilderness. They are ticked. Okay? They're not ready to go, okay. They're mad. They have, and I guess it's time we should go back there. Let's go back to Hebrews 12 real quick. Because this is the key thing. And this is really the key problem in this whole situation, which causes people's minds to be distorted, and they begin to believe lies, and they just don't see things straight. chapter 12 of Hebrews talks about being corrected by God. And if we're exercised in verse 11, if we yield to the correction, if we learn from it and we repent, then things are going to be fine. But, he said, verse 14, he said, follow peace with all men and holiness, without no man shall see the Lord. So, what was done by the fruits, and I'm going based on the fruits, it was not a peaceful thing. What was being done was not causing peace. It was causing turmoil. It was causing criticism. It was causing division. And Paul says in verse 14 to follow peace with everybody and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Pretty strong. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. You get a root of bitterness, resentment, I want my own way, God's not fair. That's Satan's attitude. That's what deceived a third of the angels, was a root of bitterness. It's been around from the beginning. And he said, lest there be any fornicator, profane person, as Esau and so on. He gives that example. And finally, he talks about the Old Testament again and about the mountain when God was talking down from the mountain. And interesting, as we go down, let's see. Okay, start in verse 25. See that you refuse not him that speaks, for if they escaped not who refused him, he's talking about the Israelites not wanting to hear God from the mountain, that spoke on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaks from heaven. In other words, if we don't listen to God and keep focused on him, we're going to have a problem. And verse 26, whose voice then shook the earth, that was back then, and scared everybody, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifies the removing of those things that are shaken or maybe or able to be shaken, Margin says, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. So he's saying we're going to be tested. Things are going to get shaken up. And if you're shakable, you're going to get shaken. He says, of those things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. So, this thing of the root of bitterness will get people every single time. It causes them, and if you go back here to 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, let's read about the love of the truth. This is when the man of sin is going to be revealed, and there's going to be in verse 3 of said, let no man deceive you by any means, that day shall not come except there be a great falling or a falling away first, and that man of sin will be revealed, the son of perdition. And then this is towards the end time, of course, we realize, but it's the same principle. And this is what I referred to before about not loving the truth. Verse 10, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. The Bible is extremely clear of what we do and what we don't do. And if you don't love it, and if you don't defend it, and if you don't stand up for it, and you ignore it, and you cause division, which God says in Proverbs, He hates people who, not the people, but the action of discord and division. And the New Testament talks about it as well. This thing of causing division and doubt and murmuring and complaining and making all these false accusations is not making God happy. That's a no-no. a big no-no. And it's something that we need to be aware of. And having a root of bitterness and resentment begins to manifest itself in all kinds of things. And pretty soon you feel righteous about it. And yeah, we need to do this. And these people are bad. And whatever you come up with. And before you know it, this is what happens. Because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. We have to love God's truth. If you love it, you stand up for it. You obey it. You do it. You know what the truth is, and you follow it. You recognize, you listen to what Satan said, you know, to Eve, and Eve should have said, well, that's not true. You know, you're calling God a liar. God does not lie. And all down the line. I mean, it's very simple. This is not complicated. If someone's, you know, calling God a liar, you know that that is not correct. But if you listen to that, then it's because you don't love what the truth is. And he said, you have to love the truth that you might be saved. And verse 11, and for this cause, because they didn't love the truth, God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. Now, this is what Paul said. I didn't write this. That's strong, and that is very important to understand. And that's what people have done. They believed a lie. Lots of lies. The angels believe lies. Satan's lies. It's an old game. It's as old as Satan's rebellion. It's not new, and it's serious business. If we don't love the truth and we don't compare what we're hearing and seeing and so on, and wait a minute, hold it. That's not the right. Yeah, but all this. Yeah, but you're causing division. Yeah, but mama. I'm sorry. Do you respect what God says or not? So that's why he says in verse 15, therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold to the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or by epistle. So, anyway, that's one of the key things, why the people at the end of the millennium will go with Satan, because they really don't love the truth. The people that had been in the church, and I gave you those examples in the past, for years, even that one man that I talked with who was an elder for 20 years. He said, well, I never really did agree with the Sabbath, you know. I was happy to hear that I didn't have to keep it anymore. Well, that's interesting. And so we talked for about an hour about that. I wanted to know where he was coming from and how he was thinking, and I've already shared that story with you in the past. Anyway, he didn't believe the truth. He didn't love the truth. He didn't even understand it. Anyway, that's not good. All right, let's go back here to the next phase of this thing. See, we started at 2. Okay. Let's go through this real quick. Now let's go to number 16. And this we can go through pretty quickly. These people are ticked off, okay? They've got a root of bitterness. They don't love the truth. They know better than what they're doing. But they've convinced themselves. Once a person gets into this root of bitterness, you convince yourself that you're really right. In fact, you feel like you're righteous and that you're really doing the righteous thing. And you hide behind the fact that you're representing the people and you're trying to protect the people and all these false concepts. All right. Korah was the son of Issachar, so on. He had a number of men, leaders, that had been appointed to lead the people, Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab and the son of Peleth and so on. And they took men. They got with a whole bunch of people, 250 princes, verse 2. and men of renown in the congregation, famous people that were the leaders, and they were looked up to and respected. But they were all upset because they were going to have to go out and live in the wilderness again. And they gathered themselves against Moses and against Aaron. And they said to them, "You take too much upon yourself, seeing the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then are you lifting yourselves up above the congregation of the Lord?" And when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. Because God says, back here a number of chapters previously, that Moses was the meekest man that lived. He was not any kind of arrogant person. He didn't even want to do this job. And so he fell on his face, and he spoke to Korah, and he said to all the company, "Even tomorrow the Lord will show who is his, who are his, and who is holy and who isn't, in essence. And you're going to find out." Now, they had to be pretty convinced in their own mind, and how they did this to convince themselves is pretty interesting, but it didn't happen overnight. And that is exactly the attitude of Satan the devil. He still thinks God's unfair and that he's right, and this whole thing is a ripoff. And he's the rippy, or the ripper, or whatever. He's getting ripped. So he said, "God's going to show you tomorrow who is with him and who isn't." And he said, "This do, you take your censers, Korah, and all the company, you take your company, and you put fire in them and put incense before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses, he shall be holy. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi." And so the next day, Moses said to Korah, he went on to say, "Here I pray you, sons of Levi, you think it's a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle or of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? You think that's a little job? God gave you that job to do." You can draw your own parallels. "And he has brought you near to him and all the brethren, the sons of Levi, with him, and seek you the priesthood also." Now, they weren't priests, but they were working in the temple as part of serving the people and serving God and representing him. "For which cause both you and all the company are gathered together against the Lord." He didn't say against him. He said, you're doing this against the Lord. "And what is Aaron that you murmur against him?" And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, "We will not come up." And that happened even with the ministers down there in South America. They refused to come to talk to the people in Cincinnati, and they were given a number of opportunities, expenses paid. "Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk?" Now, this is their answer. Now, get this. This reveals their true attitude. They were trying to smokescreen it in the beginning of the chapter. "Oh, you're taking too much. You're trying to be a prince over us." Here's the real reason. I told you they were ticked off about this, about having to do it. That was pretty upsetting. "Is it a small thing that you, Moses, have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey," referring to Egypt, "to kill us in the wilderness, except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into the land that flows with milk and honey." Now, whose fault was that? But they're blaming Moses for it. "Or given us inheritance in the fields and vineyards." Blaming him for it. They're the ones who did it to themselves. And now they're griping again. "Will you put out the eyes of these men, or try to pull the wool over their eyes? We won't come up. We're not going to talk to you." And Moses was really upset. So he asked God not to have any respect for their offering. He said, "I've never taken anything from you." Moses said to Korah, "Be you and your company before the Lord, you and Aaron tomorrow. and take every man his censer and put incense in them and bring you before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, 250 men, along with Korah. You come and stand before God, and we're going to find out who's who around here. And they took everybody, the censer and so on, and stood at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now, they must have been pretty confident they were going to win, or they wouldn't have shown up in front of the door of the tabernacle. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto the congregation. And the Lord spoke to Moses, and he said, "Stand back from this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." Now, they may not have heard that. It may have just been directly to Moses. And they fell upon their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be wroth with all the congregation?" Of course, they didn't know the congregation's attitude, which they were going to find out later. And, of course, God did. And the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "You speak to the congregation." He said, "You get up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram, move back." And Moses rose up and went, you go over there to their camp encampment. And Moses rose up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him, and they spoke to the congregation, saying, "Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins." So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram, on every side they moved back. And Dathan and Abiram came out, and they stood in the door of their tents, and their wives, and their sons, and their little children. And now Moses said, "Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own, of my own mind. Of these men, or if these men die a common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open his mouth and swallow them up, with all the that appertains to them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord." And it came to pass, as he barely ended speaking those words, that the ground opened up under them, and the earth opened her mouth, in verse 32, and swallowed them up, and their houses, and their men, everything that pertained to Korah and all their goods. They and all their that have appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about fled at the cry of them. For they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up also." And there came, God wasn't done yet. And fire came down and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. And they later retrieved those incense holders, because they were holy and so on, from the charred remains. So, I won't go through the rest of this, but then you go to verse 41. But on the morrow, now Aaron and Moses were about to find out the attitude of the people and why God wanted to just wipe them all out. But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, "You have killed the people of the Lord." They don't learn too easy. So then God said, "Stand back, I'm going to do it." I'm telling you, it's just, and well, verse 44, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Get up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment. And they fell on their faces, and they beseeched God not to do it. And in the process, 14,000, verse 49, 14,700, besides them that died about the matter of Korah, were consumed with the plague. And Aaron returned to Moses to the door of the tabernacle, and the plague was stayed." Okay. go to Proverbs 16, or 6. Proverbs, the 6th chapter, and then we'll wrap this up here quickly. Sorry for going so long. This is important for you and me to remember what the Bible says here. It's very, very clear. Proverbs 6, you start in verse 12. A naughty person, a wicked man, walks with a froward mouth. He winks with his eyes, he speaks with his feet, he teaches with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He devises mischief continually. He sows discord. He's constantly, he's the super con man. He's Mr. Slick. He's, you know, always trying to do his thing to get something for himself. Verse 15, therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. There are six things that God hates. Yes, in verse 16, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, the hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness, and he that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among the brethren. We have to love the truth. God said he hates this. He hates lying. He hates false things. And he certainly hates anybody, and any, or should say, this action, sowing discord among the brethren. Why does he hate that so much? Because that's exactly what Satan did. He started right out with Eve. It was discord. He was trying to get you to doubt and to resist or resent God, calling God a liar. Oh, no, God doesn't really mean that. It's not really true. That's discord. We better not do it, brethren. And then he goes on. He said, my son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart and tie them to your neck. They've got to be in our minds, brethren. We have to know God's way of life. We have to know what's right and wrong. And God will give that to us if we're seeking him daily in prayer and we're studying his word and we know what he says. When you go, it shall lead you. And when you sleep, it shall keep you. And when you awake, it shall talk with you. In other words, it's going to be the guide, the right and wrong guide that helps you through everything you do. And the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life. It's for our own good. But God hates that. He has no time for it. We can't see his reaction here, and how he feels about it is pretty clear. Those people had a root of bitterness there in the Old Testament, and it got them. It got them destroyed because it leads to all the self-righteousness and self-justification and anger and lying. And I mean, look at the Pharisees. They killed Christ, and they felt righteous about it. The priest, when Christ finally acknowledged that he was the Son of God, when he was asked the question, what did the priest do? He ripped his clothes. Oh, you know, that's blasphemy. Now we have the right to kill you. He felt righteous about it, killing the Son of God. What did Christ talk about the Pharisees? What did he criticize them for? You're a whited sepulcher. You look good on the outside, but inside you're filled with all kinds of dead men's bones. You know, it also says in Corinthians about the angel of Satan himself can show himself as an angel of light or a minister of righteousness. It can look good, it can sound good, but it can be a big, fat lie. And the only way we're going to be able to know the difference is if you know what this says. And you compare with what's going on in your life and what you're facing with what God says. You compare the two. And you love the truth and you stand up for it. And you don't. That's what's going to keep you from being deceived. And as long as you love the truth and you love God and you cry out to him for understanding, you will be able to make the right decision. if you reject that and you start going against what God says, then you'll start believing a lie, which he says there in 2 Thessalonians. We read it. So I hope that this is of some help. Please read what Darris McNeely did, or go online and listen to his video. He addresses all of these things in a very clear manner, and I think it'll make it helpful to you. Sorry to have to see us all go through this. I am not pleased. It's a painful experience. It always is. But like I said, I knew the ultimate outcome of this. I didn't know how it was going to all take place. I'm glad it is over at this point. But be patient. Satan will try something else. He always does. I haven't seen him give up yet. I've been through it over and over. And it's very unpleasant to watch and just to see. It's mighty disgusting. And being of a Levitical background myself, when if I allow myself to get involved, then I'm ready to go to war. Because I have no time for this baloney. I hate it. I really do. And so I just try to keep arm's length away from it, because otherwise I get too upset.